I'm Nicole.
And I'm Monica.
And we're two fangirls who like to talk about media and knit. This is our podcast, While We Were Knitting. This month, we saw Dune Part Two. I don't actually know if that's the formal title, but we all know what I'm talking about. The second movie of the Dune series. And it picks up with the integration of Paul and his mother, Jessica, into the Fremen society. And ends with Chani, a member of the Fremen who is in a romantic relationship with Paul, storming away from the castle after Paul has successfully conquered the empire, basically,
And betrayed her.
and betrayed her, as well. Although she doesn't see it, he doesn't see it that way, but he has done a betrayal. We'll get into it. So this is a new movie, so we both saw it in theaters, and I knit the turtleneck vest by the Red Heart design team.
I knit the Cozy Classic Raglan by Jessie Made Designs.
So, Monica, we spent so much time last 2 years ago just talking about the first part of this movie.
God, was that really 2 years ago?
I know, I
Holy
know. It was like
cow.
a year and a half. It was like fall of 2022. And I think it definitely had some strong continuity for the second part with the first one. It's still beautifully scored. It's still beautifully shot. Like the costumes are gorgeous. I think they'd make really good use of special effects. They're really going out there and putting like a real statement out of like, we want to be one of the great trilogies that people talk about when they talk about like big sci-fi fantasy trilogy, like Lord of the Rings, like Star Wars. And I think to a fairly solid degree, they're succeeding. There were some things where I'm like, you're not succeeding quite as much as you seem to be trying to do. But I think that some of that's probably just part of the text. So let's kind of start with that a little bit, because this is obviously a film being made in 2023, which is a different time than when the initial book was written in what, 1970
1970
something?
something, yeah.
Yeah, because it's a real, like, they're like, yeah, the Fremen are, you know, a sovereign people who have been invaded by this empire, and they should be allowed to make their own choices and decide their own destiny without outside interference. And that's something that the movie, like, states just straight up. Like, this is what is supposed to be happening. But at the same time, they are fundamentally telling a white savior narrative. So having Paul be like, I don't want to, like, do this while he is
Does it?
assuming
Does
control of the society is
it?
like, this is philosophically incoherent. It doesn't quite work. And that might be something that they ultimately manage to square in movie three, because they're clearly setting themselves up for a sequel. Like, this is the middle of a series. And I think the book series itself in book two very much is like, actually, the Messiah, a Messiah is bad. It's not good to have a Messiah. But it does mean that philosophically, this movie is a little bit incoherent.
I think it's meant to be, though, because it's not setting up the idea of a, like, the Fremen are, well, the Fremen that they're recruiting are all for it, but it doesn't seem like it's a healthy narrative, and I don't think it's supposed to, to be like, Chani challenges Lady Jessica on what she's been doing, like, this Messiah-like thread that she's been, like, spreading through the Fremen, and so does Paul himself. Now, he does end up drinking his own Kool-Aid, and which is very unfortunate because I liked him much better before any of that nonsense happened. But I also see why it happened.
Yeah, and I think that's actually the part with Chani was the most interesting to me, because I went back and I like skimmed the Wikipedia of the book to be like, I think in the book they just stay together. Like it's not like that's, I think, new to the movie, where she walks out and is like, this is not acceptable. And but yeah, to me, like, that's why I'm like, this was philosophically kind of incoherent, but like, I think they could kind of start squaring that circle with a sequel and be like, more pick up, like, Chani is in the right and she is the real hero of this series, even if Paul is kind of fitting into this figure of the chosen one that is so common in like Western speculative fiction.
And it
So,
would be really interesting if that was where they ended up going with it. You know, that like Paul did not end up the hero of this, like the final hero of this series. I would find that very intriguing.
I would be really interested in that because the way they set it up in the book is that Paul basically is like, actually, it's bad that I'm emperor and it's bad. The Messiah is like a false promise, and then wanders off into the desert, and his son, who I believe is also Chani's son, like becomes the Khazar-Hat Haderach and like becomes the Messiah, basically. So like there's still a Messiah, it's just not him. So
Well,
listen, Frank Herbert was doing some stuff with these books. Wild, wild things. That man was doing some wild things with this world building. But I did enjoy that they were like, yeah, not all Fremen are the same. Like he's from the south. He's got a different accent. Can't you tell? Once you pointed out, you're like, oh yeah, that does make sense.
It's an entire planet. Yes, it does make sense.
It's a whole planet. Shockingly, the cultures in the different parts of the planet could become different and have their own different cultures and ways of being. But I did enjoy also whenever they would talk about the South, when the Empire was up in like the space, they were just like, there's nobody there. And you're just like, of course there's nobody there. Like, yeah, I understand the like cliches you're setting up for me. I know them. So it was good. I enjoyed it a lot. I think they actually even did a good job with the sandworms because in a lot of ways, there could be like a loss of tension or a loss of excitement once you like finally see them. But even though they made those terrifying popcorn buckets, have you seen the terrifying popcorn buckets?
No, are they sandworm popcorn
Yes, they have like a
buckets?
lid,
That's
like a sandworm's mouth, and it looks like very, very,
amazing.
yeah, it's a thing that happened. But I don't support those buckets. I think they're terrifying. But I thought that the CGI for the sandworm was very, very compelling.
I agree with you 100% on like how spot on they were with the visuals. The visuals were so immersive. The sandworms could have been comical. I mean, they could have been, especially now that people are like apparently writing them much more comically than in the first movie. The one thing that I am a little sad about is that the sandworms have definitely lost. They have lost they still have the tension, but they no longer have the terror in this as they did in the previous one. They are commonplace almost, rather than something that the only people who are scared of them are the enemy dudes. And that's not a bad thing, but the visuals could have definitely ended up a lot more cartoony than they did, and I'm glad they didn't,
It's my understanding that because they've done previous versions of this movie, and that the sandworms in those previous versions were not compelling. It's my understanding of that situation.
No, these ones are legitimately still quite scary looking, and you really got an idea of the scale of them when Paul was riding the sandworm, that even with these like giant hooks he's carrying, it hooks under like one scale of the sandworm. The big granddaddy sandworm.
Oh yeah. Well, that was really beautiful. And the other visual that like I will probably remember about this movie, and I knew it was coming because I knew this was in the books and I had heard like some chatter about it, was when they were like, and then you see the self-aware fetus. And
Oh God, yes.
I was like, I don't like this actually. I
No,
don't like this.
I did not like the talking fetus.
No, I mean, it's
No.
canon to the book. And I don't like, my thing is, like, I would have preferred to have been told about the talking fetus rather than seeing the talking fetus. I didn't like
Yes.
seeing the talking
No,
fetus.
that was not a visual that I liked. I was much more into the whole. Like I was like, show me more of this like gorgeous like sparkly desert landscape, and rather than talking fetuses and like this horrible dark murderous society of the Harkonnens, I was like, I'm not actually interested in them. Let's go back to the
Well, the thing about the Harkonnens, and like I understand where you're coming from, but I liked that it was in black and white, because to me that was like, that
yes.
was again that visual, like we are committing to a very strong visual aesthetic where we have this very stark lighting that makes these people seem even more like,
Sinister.
yeah. And I thought that was very visually effective.
That's true. The visual contrast between the worlds was like phenomenal. But
Yeah.
yes, the fact that like sections of it were purely in black and white, I was like, what is that? Oh, this is an intentional choice.
It was very funny because I kept looking at the Harkonnens and I'm like, oh, not having eyebrows is weird. It's weird when people don't have eyebrows. And I was like, I didn't realize I had such. And I mean, obviously, sometimes people don't have eyebrows because of medical conditions or whatever, but like, it's weird to see an entire group of people without eyebrows and how that kind of changes their the way that at least I was registering their faces. I didn't realize I was going to have such a strong, like, wow, this is a different vibe
Yeah.
reaction.
You know what they reminded me of? They reminded me of the War Boys from Mad
Yes.
Max. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because it's
That
that
same
same.
sort of uncanny valley effect. Yeah.
Agreed. Agreed. And I also thought it was helpful to have. What's his face? The nephew who wasn't Dave Bautista, as like,
Yes.
yeah, he was apparently Elvis in the Elvis thing. And I was like sitting there looking,
Oh.
like, I'm not sure if he just doesn't look like Elvis outside of makeup or if I needed eyebrows in order for him to look like Elvis. I was thinking about that for like a solid minute or two. But it was really helpful to have him to show kind of a mirror to Paul more explicitly because I feel like Dave Bautista, whose character's name I'm completely blanking on, was never supposed to act as like a mirror to Paul. But you, like here, you
No.
have another young heir of a great house, who is very much a product and has been tested by the Bene Gesserit, and it's like okay, he's the backup, you know? Like they're like, yeah, he's a psychopath. We understand that. We know that. And if we need to, we'll make use of him. So.
I was a little confused by that sort of from a plot point of view, because my understanding was that like the Bene Gesserit testing, et cetera, was because Paul had powers.
Well, the so what was supposed to happen, and again, I don't remember if this is me remembering the book or me remembering the first movie, unfortunately, but it's basically that Jessica was supposed to have a daughter, and that daughter
Right.
was
And
supposed to
she had
be.
a boy. Yeah.
Yeah, was supposed to be the mother of the Cassie Charter Act,
Right,
and
right.
Austin Butler, who's playing the nephew, is supposed to be the father. So she was a generation early.
Oh,
Yeah,
yes.
so that was the
Wait, but
plan.
how would that have worked considering she was the daughter of
I think they
Isaac?
were. I think they were just like, we need specific things. I don't know.
Got it.
They're not worried
Got
about
it.
incest in this universe.
Apparently not.
No. So it was interesting to have that as like here in this movie. It's like okay, no, and in the book they're like more they're the kind of the same person, but like what happens if somebody with this potential and with these powers is like not a good person? And I mean, he doesn't have the same foresight that Paul does because Paul has like the visions of the future that were never shown as, but they have the ability to pass the test of the needle. So
Got
that they're
it.
both
Got it.
undergoing that. So they're like, okay, if Paul is option 1A, but option 1B is the nephew in the Bene Gesserit schemes to produce the Kazat Chatterat.
And well, they apparently there is another baby on the way.
I
There is so
mean,
much procreation in these series.
listen, these books are like very into like lineage in a lot of
And
ways. Yeah.
bloodline,
And one of the things that I was realizing that I like fundamentally disagreed with the last time through when I was reading the book that I had not picked up as much when I was reading it as like a young teen was it's really much about like separating yourself from the body and like becoming a higher intellect and like maintaining control and being like, you know, fear is the death, is the mind killer is the death.
Mind
I'm
killer,
like, listen, we're animals. You cannot escape your body. We are all just animals. So like, I'm like, I don't know if that like really holds up, or at least is something I agree with philosophically, but it was interesting how much, you know, it's about the mind, but it is also very much about who your parents are and what your DNA is on a very kind of power level in the universe of Dune, at least.
It was very interesting to me. Like, I was thinking about this when Paul and Nephew Dude were, the Navarone had were having their duel, because these are like supposed to all be, advanced spacefaring societies, but they still live by, I mean, they look down at the Fremen for the way the Fremen live, but they're not living by rules that are any less brutal. I mean, everyone just stands aside while there is this like match to the death with knives between these two heirs of noble houses, and everyone's like, yep, okay, this is just what's happening. No one is any better than anyone
Oh
else in
no.
this series.
No, absolutely not. And I do think that this movie very much recognizes kind of the hypocrisy of the Empire in terms of like they're like, oh, we're so advanced, but it's like, no, not really.
No, you're really not.
No. It was also very funny to see I'm blanking on his name. What's his face? Who was playing the Emperor? Christopher
Oh,
Walken.
Christopher
I was like,
Walken.
yeah. I was like, oh,
I
yeah, that's actually a, that's a perfect choice. It's very
know.
funny to be like, Christopher Walken will be the Empire. Yeah. The creepy number one creepy dude. And I'm like, yeah, great. I understand what you mean with this casting message received. And to like explicitly call out his hypocrisy in eliminating the treaties and also the like almost amoral attitude as the movie presents it of the Bene Gesserit, which they're like, yeah, we're fine with killing off an entire family plus all their retainers that we are that's acceptable to us. So I mean, at least in the books, the conflict between Paul and the Bene Gesserit becomes like a big thing in the second book. But I don't know.
Understandably, I mean, they're horrible.
I mean, they're amoral is what I would say. They have
That's
goals and
fair.
plans, and they are going to achieve those goals and plans regardless of the costs involved.
Well, right. Yes. It's just right now it is still unclear for whose benefit those goals and plans are,
Yes.
right? Because none of that is quite made explicit. You're like, you know that they're trying to breed this particular person, but there is no, but the whole like the Lyaselle Gellayeb, the whole like narrative that they have put forward, like what is the purpose of that narrative? And that we don't, I don't think that we quite understand that
The
yet, do
purpose of the
we?
narrative is to provide for a Bene Gesserit and her child in the case.
Well, right.
It's basically to set up to have like if somebody ends up like Jessica and Paul to make sure that the people of that planet are accepting of their children and have a built-in reason to want to work with them.
I mean, that's exactly what happened. Very effective. But like what is their like goal for the universe? They already control the emperor. They already control most of the great houses. So like what is the point of what they are doing? And I'm not quite sure I understand that yet, though I'm not quite sure we're supposed to.
It's basically the point is to produce the Kesey Chenorakh, and then the Kesey Chenorakh is supposed to be like, and now we do this. That's my understanding. It's like the whole point is to produce this one person, and then that one person sets the agenda, which also seems fully insane.
Right?
But
Exactly. I'm like, so you're gonna produce this person for what? What, like, what is this person exactly supposed to do? But no one knows. No one knows.
that's unclear. That's very unclear. But taking of the water of life, which is actually the same kind of process of becoming a Reverend Mother that Jessica undergoes with the Fremen, is basically the accessing of ancestral memories and, setting up so this creepy self-aware fetus also has access to those ancestral memories.
Oh, is that why everyone was like, oh no, we like she's pregnant, we have committed a great, et cetera. I'm like, well, I mean, if she died, then yes, but like how did y'all not know she was pregnant? She didn't say anything, so
No, it's I guess this is probably a spoiler for future movies, but basically because the fetus also ingested the quote unquote water of life, then it also kind of awakens them to ancestral memories. And unlike an adult, they don't have a personality, they don't have anything of their own, so they are like overwhelmed and aware. So whenever Jessica is like, your sister is talking to me, she is actually in the series of the movie talking to her. And she so yeah, it's a whole thing. But that's why it's considered a sin, is because it's basically creating this being that is going to be overwhelmed by all this stuff. I don't know. It's a lot of weird world building. Frank Herbert was just, he was doing stuff. He was doing stuff, you know?
But yes, I am mad for Chani.
Yes. I think she should be kind of, again, the hero of this series. Like, to me, she is morally in the right. And I love how much she's just like very much accurately diagnosing and calling out what is going on. She's like, no, you're using us for your plan. This is about you. And, you know, she's loves Paul and she wants to fight with him when she thinks she's fighting for her people's freedom. And she's, you know, want think of some of them as partners, but it's when she's like, oh, you're doing this so you can be emperor. She's like, I this is not what my people died for. And some of my people might think that you are the Messiah, and that's okay. But she's like, I don't think you're the Messiah. I think you're just a guy. So, but it's a lot going on, and I am interested to see how, you know, movie three kind of all fits
I'm
in.
really hoping it is movie three and not movie three part one and movie three part two. That's what I'm like desperately hoping it doesn't end up being.
Well, the thing is, this is the first book. This is we've hit the end of the first book. So like if you're doing two movies per each book, like you do need two more movies. But I mean, it's just 'cause like, or if they decide to go in a completely different direction, or not even completely different, but just a somewhat different direction, then they might end that differently and they might not need a whole movie. But they have all these threads that they need to pick up with Chani. With what's her face, the princess.
I don't think they did they give her name?
I think it's Princess Aurelian, but again, that's just me being like, I think that's the name. Yeah, Princess Aurelian with his sister, with Paul's sister, who's I think technically unnamed, but is Aaliyah. So yeah, they have a lot of threads that are outstanding. So like I definitely think they need at least one more movie. Like if they decide to do all of book two, I think they actually might have a case for two movies, but it is, I agree that it is a lot. It is a lot to be like, this is four. They're long movies too. I
They're
mean,
long movies. This one was shorter. I think this one
it
was
was three
shorter than the.
hours.
Oh, maybe it wasn't.
If, no, I'm going to be really honest. I do not believe in long movies. I was having a blast during all 3 hours, even with all my like philosophical like notes. I was like, no, this is great. I'm having so much fun. Like I watched it and I was like, do I want to go see it again next weekend?
I would watch it again. I would totally watch it again, and I would watch it again in the theaters. And I don't normally watch things more than once, so.
I mean, it's a very visually rich movie, and it's just really good to see it big. I like seeing them big.
It definitely benefited from the big screen.
Oh yeah, for sure. I actually went afterwards. I watched. I was like, what would I knit? Because normally I just kind of pull something out. But there's something called Dune by Knitting for Breakfast, and it's a little capelet, and it's like got these sinuous cables, almost like the sands of a dune, and it's just really beautiful. And I was like, oh, I would knit that because the visual that stuck the most with me was the desert, you know?
So what I would have knit was, and I did not intend this to be the pun that it ended up being, but Melanie Berg has a shawl called On the Spice Market.
Oh my God.
And it's stripes of neutral colors and then tiny little speckles on a field of cream. So it made me think of the twinkle of spice, on the sand and in the food. And I was like, oh, you know what? That would work for me.
I remember that shawl. Now that you said it, I was like, do I know that shawl? I was like, yes, it is a very visually distinct shawl. Oh. And I mean, the spice must flow, Monica.
It does. Must capture the spice. Must capture the spice market.
I liked that they got back to the Imperial like presence going down with that spice ship, like to extract spice. Because that was such a big motif of the first movie that it was good to be like, oh, this is kind of the opposite view of that, where before it was like, oh, we want to go in and get the stuff out, and you're rooting for them to escape, you're rooting for the ship to make it. And this time you're like, no, screw this ship. I hope everything blows up. And it does.
And it does. It
Yeah.
does. They were very good at blowing up the ships.
Yes. And I know you're much bigger fight scene Africando than I am, so I'm curious to see what you think of it. But I really thought they did a very good job with the Fremen fighting style, like the battle scenes. Like, I felt like the battle scenes against the Imperial forces really displayed in combat, like who both of these groups were and what their strengths were.
It's desert guerrilla warfare, you know? It's coming from above, like all these like beautiful sweeps and their tiny little like sensors poking out of the sand and then like all leaping out of the sand or hiding themselves from overhead attackers by like concealing themselves underneath the legs of the walker. I mean, really, like the way they choreographed their fight scenes was like phenomenal.
Yeah. I even thought that the fight scene between Paul and the Na Baron was like really very striking.
The
So,
contrast, the
yes.
lighting of it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole movie is beautifully lit. I feel like we keep coming back to this. Like, wow, what a beautiful movie. But it is a beautiful movie.
Yeah, the scope of it. There were definitely times I was like, where in the name of God did they film this
Oh, wow.
thing?
I didn't look that one up, but it's very, very visually striking. And like, I am not a big movie buff, so maybe I shouldn't like say this, but it doesn't look like anything else that I've seen, you know? Like, I
Agreed.
feel like most Avengers movies, I'm like, yeah, this is a Marvel movie. I know what Marvel movies look like. The Dune movies don't look like that. They don't look like
No.
Lord of the Rings. They
No,
don't
no.
look like
They don't
Star
sound
Wars.
like it either.
No. I think it's very, very effective on that front.
The funny thing about the score, so I was doing a perfectly fine job knitting myself along. I probably twisted a couple of stitches and I may have missed a decrease or two, but that's fine. It's, you know, it's a sweater, whatever. The one thing was they very effectively used silence during the movie. Like there were times where there was no music, you know, nothing. It was like dead silence. And I had to stop knitting during them because even just the like swish of my metal needles seemed too loud to me. So I was like, I do not want to disturb the people around me with the swish of my metal needles during this very, you know, this very dramatic silent moment.
No. Well, you're a very good moviegoer. I realized about 20 minutes in that not only had I dropped a stitch, I had dropped a stitch like, and it was like two rows down. So I was just like, I can't keep going. And it was like stuck in that flat. I was like, I have the easy, I like picked something where I was knew that I was going to be in a really easy portion. I was like, I can't drop it off this thing because it's on a circular needle. And I dropped a stitch and I was just like, I can't recover from this. Not in the dark. Not in the
the
dark. So once again, my difficulty is with knitting in movie theaters continue. So I will
I
see what
think
this is.
it's cursed. We're gonna have to do another one at some
At some point, this is
point.
why like there was a stretch because we did those two movies. We did Barbie and we did I don't remember whatever movie we were other than in theaters. And I oh Spider-Verse. And I
Spider-Verse,
screwed up in both of them. And I was like, okay, well, I guess we can't see movies in theaters where I'm incapable of knitting in the dark. But we made an exception for Dune because
we
it's
did.
now it, and I'm still incapable of knitting in movie theaters. So.
I found that this was a good project because it was a large circumference circular stockinette in the round, and I could just go, 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 go.
Yeah,
And
no.
yes, I mean, like I said, I probably did miss a couple of decreases looking at my stitch markers. I'm like, oh yeah, that's that. I probably did a few too many rows before my decrease, but it's
It's
fine. It's fine.
fine. It's fine. It's, you know, it's a sweater. You can fudge it if it's a loose fitting sweater. I mean, theoretically, it should have been a good knitting pattern, but the hunt continues for something I can actually knit in movie theaters. Well, I am so glad that we watched this movie and might watch this movie again just for funsies on our own. But next month, we are not going to be recording because we are kind of busy, but we will be recording in May and we will be watching Disney's Elemental. It's very beautiful, and I have seen it, and it will be Monica's first time. So we will talk to you in May. Bye.